This is Due Line number 8, volume 1, number 8, February 1969. And on the cover, it has the Batman kind of icon, bang. Remember in the mid-60s in the Batman TV show, they would bat, pow, whack. So it has the Batmanish bang, B-A-N-G, exclamation mark, with rays coming out behind it. And then on the title, I mean on the cover, it says the Due Line Newsletter Megascene Section. So it's a pun on magazine, but it's spelled M-E-G-A-S-C-E-N-E, magazine or Megascene Section. Now, McCone's always providing the Megascene because he gives big patterns. So the Due Line Newsletter Megascene Section, he never had Megascene Section on previous issues, by Marsh McCone. Then it says the rest of the cover page titles, The Mini State and the Future of Organization. Gray at 3, and that's G-R-A-Y. That's a line from Finnegan's Wake. He doesn't say that, but that's we know where it comes from. Gray at 3. Speed up as new structure. Speed up with a hyphen in it. Then, the business of art and the art of business. And then, at the very bottom right, it says expansion or implosion. I think it's asking whether the bang is an expansion or an implosion. Now, McLuhan would say expansion happened in the hot phase of history. The growing fragmentation of visual space and visual technologies was expansion or explosion. Electricity retrieved implosion or enhanced implosion. So explosion versus implosion. And, of course, 100 years ago, everybody started worrying about, including George Orwell, the world government, the bureaucracy in an imploded global village. And that's changed many times. And we could say that we've imploded to lockdown Bob Rule right now with the help of Ion and Iondom. So the first page, and there's a few pages in this. We won't finish it tonight, I don't think. Let's see. There's a lot. So it says, it has a picture of a filing cabinet. This is on the first page after the cover page. And it says, with shrinking size words, having explored the worlds of miniskirt and mini-slum, remember we did that in the last issue with the newspaper format, and then it shrinks down to a common size. So having explored is bigger letters, then the worlds of is a little smaller. Then miniskirt is a little smaller. Then mini-slum is smallest, and it's equal to the rest of the page. So having explored the worlds of miniskirt and mini-slum, it becomes easier to tackle other kinds of systems which result from the electric speed-up of information movement. The Pueblo episode, which occurred, I think, around late 68, early 69, where North Vietnam stole a major aircraft carrier, some kind of major ship that the Americans owned. It's called, and so the humiliation was, you know, these little backward Aboriginal culture stole this high-tech, huge ship. And it's spelled P-U-E-B-L-O. It's sort of like the same idea as, you know, a guy in a cave knocked out the World Trade Center. How's that happen? How did those guys surpass the surveillance around New York City? So it says, the Puebla episode is only one very dramatic instance of what is becoming a universal condition. So you can even say that this predicts 911. The Pueblo was the acme or peak of an electronic service unit, which yet depended upon a hardware bureaucracy in Washington. So he's talking about the boat. The Pueblo was the acme of an electronic service unit, which yet depended upon a hardware bureaucracy in Washington. It got, quote, hung up, unquote, on a direct media conflict. So it got hung up on a direct media conflict, hung up in quotes. The discrepancy, because being hung up was the beginning, it was a new slang term in the late 60s, so McLuhan has to put it in quotes. Not most people aren't saying it, just the youth cultures may be saying it. But McLuhan knows all that the youth cultures are saying because he's teaching these kids day in and day out, so he hears what they're into. It got hung up on a direct media conflict. Just like McLuhan said, Watergate was a battle between the newspaper and the television over the advertising dollar. So following in Innes, Wyndham Lewis and Harold Innes's footsteps, major events are due to conflicting media environments, like Mark was saying about Gutenberg press effect versus manuscript culture. So it got hung up on a direct media conflict. The discrepancy in information speed, even between the telephone and in-out basket, you know, in a bureaucracy, in an office, serves as the same kind of indication of media conflict and interface experienced in every business and government organization. Paradoxically, it is the old hardware bureaucracy based on memos and filing systems that is the open system. Fragmentation and specialization make for openness. There was a phrase, the open society, I think it was written in the 40s by Karl Popper, open society versus a closed society. Humanists regarded the literate environment as an open society. The electronic world was tending towards a closed and totalitarian. So McLuhan is saying fragmentation and specialization make for openness. Something can always be fitted into or added to such systems. The town planners are still engaged in trying to insert new units of businesses or residences into the old 19th century spaces of our cities. As pointed out by Karl Popper in, quote, The Open Society and Its Enemies, that's the book title. As pointed out by Karl Popper in The Open Society and Its Enemies, Socrates was considered a villain in Greek tribal society because he proposed to open it up for analysis and inspection. So Socrates was starting to bring in dynamics of visual space. The integral resonating world of pre-literate man is just as close as the integral resonating electronic world of post-literate man. So this is what Wyndham Lewis, James Joyce, and the Vorticists realized, that the electric environments were bringing in what became popularized with the term totalitarian. That's an integral resonating. All people say, I want to have an integral awareness. I want to be resonating. I want to be electronic. They are closing themselves down in relation to values of the printing press. The integral resonating world of pre-literate man is just as closed as the integral resonating electronic world of post-literate man. Computer designing and planning develops into a visual blueprint system of organization by departments and specialist areas that creates a unified resonating whole. There's a paradox of the computer environment. It integrates the world, but it does what McLuhan says, uses the past rearview mirror forms of knowledge organization, resulting in two-bit awareness, two-bit knowledge, two-bit situation, yes, no, two-bit knowledge of the digital technology. So computer designing and planning develops into a visual blueprint pattern of organization by departments and specialist areas that creates a unified resonating whole. And he's talking about mainframe computers in the 60s. I think that's what the term was. Any innovation in such an instantaneous order, electric world's an instantaneous order where everybody's in touch with everybody, modifies the whole structure at once. So any innovation in such an instantaneous order affects everything, modifies the whole structure at once. We are familiar with the effect at the level of the image in italics. We are familiar with this effect at the level of the image. Whether it be a person, a corporation, or a nation, its image can be changed instantly by any outstanding event that impinges on that image, that impinges on an image, like the Pueblo incident impinged on the American image. That is why tribal societies are so vulnerable and touchy about, quote, loss of face, unquote. Very touchy about loss of face. The man of honor in the old feudal world, that's tribal, felt the slightest stain as if it were a wound. In the spiritual realm, even a, quote, venial sin, unquote, can mar the entire structure. So if you've got a venial sin, look out. If the town planners in the electric age can no longer approach space as merely something to be filled in, we can observe the same pressures exerted upon the dress designer in our new tribal time. As long as dress was merely a covering of the body, it was possible to have fashions that were seasonal or regional. Today we have abandoned dress for costume and role-playing. He would say the miniskirt was a costume. With the result that the slightest change of sideburns or leg gear resonates with a new intensity of role. So leg gear, that would be maxi skirts coming in. The average middle class little man would wouldn't grow their hair long, but they would add sideburns. When Watergate happened, I'm just adding this, Nixon was in trouble in the first phases of Watergate before he had to leave office. McLuhan said, Nixon should grow sideburns, a mustache, you know, make his blank tail face resonate slightly with the TV image. He might have a better effect than his tense lawyer kind of image, old-fashioned lawyer. So today we have abandoned dress for costume and role-playing. This is what McClune does. He sets up polarities. He says dress is the Gutenberg era. Costume is the Marconi or electronic era. So he's always setting up these temporary dialectics. Today we have abandoned dress for costume and role-playing, with the result that the slightest change of sideburns or leg gear resonates with a new intensity of role. As noted in Newsletter 7, and I'm reading from Newsletter 8, the miniskirt is not dress in quotes, at all, but a form of ritual or tribal garb. Going with the miniskirt is a total cooling of sex. In the same way, the job holder occupies a niche or place, but a role player is involved in the entire structure. The robes of judge invest him with a role. The judge looks like he has a role. The robes of judge invest the judge with a role, not a job. He puts on the community, not a dress. It is this kind of contrast between job and role that is now being felt throughout the entire world of business and government. And then there's a drawing of the king, a cartoon drawing of the king, the emperor who has no clothes. And it says beside it, the emperor's new clothes. And close is spelled C-L-O-S-E. That would be sensory closure, we were talking about last week, S-C, as opposed to sensory impact. The emperor's new clothes, spelled C-L-O-S-E. And above that, top of the page, is all these punctuation marks, periods, colons, semicolons, question marks, exclamation marks, quotation marks, dashes. That's the old way of visually demarcation. It also is a way of enhancing sound, print to have sound effects or acoustic resonance. So then you turn the page, and it says, says at the upper left, mini skirt, comma, mini slum, comma, mini state, colon, part 2 of 2. In this section, it says the mini state and the future of organization, which stretches over 2 pages. There is a picture on the left of the Arc de Triomphe with the globe inside. So the Arc de Triomphe is visual space, and it's containing the globe. That's the past situation. That's the elites, the Trilateral Commission, the Arc de Triomphe framing the resonating sphere of the Earth. So McClune says, the electric information environment that now services the old bureaucracy of business and government is, in effect, a tribal garb put on over the old civilized or specialist dress. The result is confusion and breakdown among all the bureaucracies, regardless of region or political ideology. The young generation dramatizes this breakdown by using the streets and bureaucratic spaces as theaters in which to project their new sense of role-playing and to announce their rejection of the old structures as irrelevant to their needs. The young today grow up absurd. They are, quote, gray at 3, and he doesn't indicate that that's from Finnegan's Wake. Just as they are, quote, gray at 3, unquote. That is, they have imbibed more information standing up in their playpens in front of a TV than their grandparents imbibed in an entire lifetime. In this saturated state, they enter institutions of learning where the instruction consists of a small trickle of classified data. That is why the world has become a theater of the absurd for many people. Peter Drucker, who was the guru of management, corporate management, Peter Drucker points to a slightly older discrepancy with regard to what he terms as the new pluralism, that's italicized. He notes, so Drucker notes, quote, to most of us today, the power of the central government seems to be unchallenged, whether we applaud or deplore it. Tomorrow's historian may come to call our era, quote, the twilight of central government, unquote. Impotence rather than omnipotence may well appear to him. That would be what? Someone in the future? What's him? Tomorrow's historian, right. Impotence rather than omnipotence may well appear to the tomorrow's historian, to him, the most remarkable feature of government in the closing decades of the 20th century. And it says footnote 1. What's that? Footnote 1. Oh, yeah, so he quotes Peter Drucker from the book The Age of Discontinuity, Harper and Row, 1968, page 171. Matter of fact, most of the sightings are going to be from that book. And so this is written in late 68, early 69, and he's quoting a book that just came out. And Drucker was an old friend of McLuhan's. Drucker, in his essay on McLuhan, in a very good book called Adventures of a Bystander, he came out of Frankfurt, I think, the oligarchy I've mentioned before. He brought Fritz Kramer, helped bring Fritz Kramer over to the United States, and Fritz Kramer had worked for the Nazis. And then Kramer became the guru of Henry Kissinger and a guru in the Pentagon. So Drucker comes from high backgrounds, part of the old Arc de Triomphe oligarchy, and he becomes a heavy management consultant, but he was fortunate to meet McLuhan in 1940 or 41. He saw McLuhan talk, and when he later became a friend and then later understood what McLuhan was saying, he said McLuhan basically said the meeting was the message in his lecture in 40 and 41, which is an interesting statement. We don't know if it's true, but Drucker perceived that Marshall had been saying his thing from quite an early point. I mean, Marshall was still writing his PhD in 1940. Okay, so going with the breakdown of central structures of the old hardware age, Drucker points out, quote, "There's not one country in the world today where the entire government establishment of 1910 could not comfortably be housed in the smallest of the new government buildings now going up, with room to spare for a grand opera house and a skating rink." That's from the book, The Age of Discontinuity. Drucker adds that, quote, "It is just as true of Japan. Even the smallest Japanese prefecture has a brand new office building that rivals the Tokyo Ministry buildings that sufficed Imperial Japan when it challenged the West for world leadership 25 years ago." So that would be 1943. There's not one country in the world. Okay. "It doesn't matter," says McLuhan, "what level of operation one scans. The disproportion between the centralizing and decentralizing of power appears as the dominant pattern." And then he quotes Drucker again. "Indeed, the Viet Cong soldiers in Vietnam, for all that they are guerrillas," in quotes, end quote, "and, quote, live off the land," in quotes, "have many times the firepower per soldier of the most highly powered army prior to the closing years of World War II. I read that again. "Indeed, the Viet Cong soldiers in Vietnam, for all that they are guerrillas and live off the land, have many times the firepower per soldier of the most highly powered army prior to the closing years of World War II. And so that's the column on that page. It's actually the next page. The first few paragraphs were on the left page. Now we're on the next page. And to the right of that column, it says, "Peter Drucker is exceptionally aware of the crises in the multitudinous area of organization and insists that, quote, what is therefore needed is a theory of organization." Now, McLuhan later wrote an essay on Drucker, 1970-71, calling him the man who came to listen. It's like Drucker was always using McLuhan stuff. And so Drucker says, what is therefore needed is a theory of organization. McLuhan knew that McLuhan was providing that, and Drucker still wanted to have a role, be a manager, so he ignored what McLuhan said on the deep level, used it as a surface point so he could keep his own proposals going. That's Drucker. Then below that, there's another little paragraph. McLuhan says, "It is precisely a theory of organization I am offering here and in subsequent newsletters." There it is. I hadn't noticed that. I knew McLuhan felt that when I first criticized the statement by Drucker, the statement being, what is therefore needed is a theory of organization, and Drucker was ignoring McLuhan. Then McLuhan says, a year or two later, "Drucker is the man who came to listen, in a way, to passively spy on McLuhan. There's McLuhan saying, don't come and listen. Engage. Find out what we're talking about, Mr. Drucker, because I've got the solution here," says McLuhan, "and you're ignoring it." So that's why McLuhan says, "It is precisely a theory of organization I am offering here and in subsequent newsletters." So we turn the page, and this is more of a collage, not a direct column. There's things printed in different angles, and it says, upper left, "Any speed up in information movement tends at first to centralize organization, as in the Renaissance, when Gutenberg technology first made possible the development of large central bureaucracies by the mass production of homogeneous data." We call that visual space. And he has a big bracket to the right, you know, one of those inclusive brackets, those curvy brackets, and it says, i.e., the printed word. Then underneath that, over towards the right, it says, it was this process that created the, quote, reading public, unquote, uniform prices and mass markets. Then came the nation-state after centuries of city-states or mini-states. As pointed out that earlier, that Greece was not the term for 2,000 years ago. It was a bunch of city-states. Okay, so then there's another paragraph in the middle of the page. It says, from the same Gutenberg technology proceeded the centralized Romanization of the Roman Catholic Church. Such centralized organization via homogeneous and fragmented hardware, in brackets, of which the Gutenberg movable types remain the matrix today, and bracketed, undergoes a complete reversal of form and structure with the further speed up via telecommunications. I'll read that sentence again. Such centralized organization via homogeneous and fragmented hardware, in brackets, of which the Gutenberg movable types remain the matrix today, close bracket, undergoes a complete reversal of form and structure with the further speed up via telecommunications. Now, so far, there's nothing really new being said in this newsletter. He's repeated these sentences in earlier newsletters, in earlier books, in many articles. You could say that McLuhan is, in art painting terms, he's a minimalist. He's repeating the same unit over and over, as you see in much minimalist art in the 60s. So he's like, you got a repeating little verbal module. And he just adds a little wrinkle by bringing in the latest event, Pueblo. So around this paragraph I just read, it has bracketing it on an angle, TV, and then below that computer, and below that satellite. And on the right side, it's on telegraph, it's tilting at 45 degrees, telephone is horizontal, and radio is going down southeast at 45 degrees. Same structure on the left, TV, computer, satellite, telegraph, telephone, radio. Then in the middle of the page, moving down, all organizations at the electric speeds of the new service environment necessarily decentralized. Then written, this sentence written vertically, the maxi state becomes the mini state. Then he says the open, and he has a space between O, P, E, and N, comma, fragmented. Now fragmented, each letter is hyphenated. So the open, fragmented, fragmented structure becomes the closed integral structure. The same is true of yoking together government and the medical profession. Medical men see individuals. Indeed, none of us would want to be treated by a physician who treats, quote, averages, unquote. But no government can handle anything but averages. The relationship between university and business, between university and the armed forces, is similarly one of mutual failure to understand, of mutual suspicion and constant friction. And yet, we will continue to see more of these relationships. They are necessary to produce the results that society wants. And he's got footnote 6. Let's see. Oh, maybe that whole paragraph is from Drucker, but he doesn't have a quote. Let's see. Yeah, maybe that whole thing is Drucker. Drucker wrote, the same is true of yoking together government and the medical profession. Medical men see individuals. Yeah, that's not really a kind of sentence McLuhan would say. Indeed, none of us would want to be treated by a physician who treats averages. But no government can handle anything but averages. The relationship between university and business, between university and the armed forces, is similarly one of mutual failure to understand, of mutual suspicion, and constant friction. And yet we will continue to see more of these relationships. They are necessary to produce the results that society wants. Now, McLuhan would explain why a certain kind of society imagines certain kind of results. He goes deeper than Drucker. So then in the next page is a pixelated pattern of a famous Dutch painting. One is normal photograph, but a lot of dots. But then the one above it has emphasizes the dots, so you can't see the figure. So one is like movie screen or photograph, and the image above is like television. The dots of TV, of the cathode ray tube. And beside it, in vertical, it says, big letters, information overload beside the hyperpixelated. or pattern recognition, the more or less pixelated the old painting, and you can make out the figures. So when there's too much dots, that's information overload. But when you can make out the broad outlines, that's pattern recognition. So in small letters, McLuhan says, when any situation becomes overcharged with data, the details fall away, and the pattern of interrelationships that they provide emerges starkly. This is one aspect of the dynamics of, quote, breakdown as breakthrough. Okay, turn the page. It says, capital letters at the top, the herb. You will hear McLuhan quote this sentence often. The herb, comma, it orbs. I think it's from Finnegan's Wake. So he has a minimalist kind of painting, just repeating squares that could be used in art in the 60s, a repeating pattern. And so it says, the herb, and then dot, 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 and then underneath it says, big letters, structure recognition. Then on the side, on 45-degree angle, it says, the open, comma, fragmented structure, comma, becomes the closed, comma, integral structure. And you go down the bottom, it says, and reverse patterns. So above it says, structure recognition, pretty size, pretty big print. Below, you scan down, and reverse patterns. Structure recognition, or pattern recognition, and reverse patterns. And to the right of reverse patterns, it says, the maxi state becomes the mini state. To the right of structure recognition of above, it said, the open fragmented structure becomes the closed integral structure. You see how he's repeating the same sentence throughout the whole newsletter? And anybody who's read the newsletter carefully for the first seven issues, now reading this, if they're the average person who can't stand repetition of an idea, will probably throw it away. So what is this? This guy just keeps ripping off his own self and providing anything new. But people can't see that McLuhan said depth repetition is important. So he has his alibi. An acoustic person doesn't mind repeating the meme. So then you go to the next page where it says dot, 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 it orbs. So at the top it continues the herb, dot, 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 it orbs. Then it says, in big letters, but in a rainbow arch, many states are not centralized governments, but resonating spheres. And but resonating spheres is vertical, and the opposite arc, as many states are not centralized governments, so it's basically looks like an ellipse, with spheres becoming a handle. Inside this ellipse, it says, the American Negro is a mini-state first created by radio and jazz. On the middle left, it says, very small print, all organizations at the electric speeds of the new service environments, comma, necessarily decentralize. And on the upper left, opposite the first arcing statement, many states are not centralized governments, it says, these new forms are inclusive, like those of family and tribal, these new forms are inclusive, like those of family and tribal government. So, inclusive. Visual space is exclusive. One man, one vote. Now, this sphere, this arcing structure for many states are not centralized governments, and then down below that, reverse arcing, but resonating spheres. Spheres becomes a different direction. Then down the bottom on the left, it says, arcing up with centers everywhere. And then it reverse arcs down below that in the middle and says, and boundaries nowhere. So the full sentence is, many states are not centralized governments, but resonating spheres with centers everywhere and boundaries nowhere. So that goes over the whole page. Underneath, with centers everywhere in the bottom left corner, it says, the recognition of structure, in brackets, as compared to a mere ongoing operation, close bracket, occurred a century ago in the art world. So these executives who probably know nothing about art, or whoever is reading this, sees McLuhan trying to get them to see how it goes across the society into areas that the newsletter reader might not be interested in. So reading again, the recognition of structure, that's sort of like by Cézanne in painting. Remember, Cézanne started to paint light. The photograph gave the details, so they got to go into the form, not the content that the photograph could beat any painting with. So it's called looking into the structure of painting and art. So it says the recognition of structure, in brackets, as compared to a mere ongoing operation, close quote, close bracket, occurred a century ago, so that's 1968-69 back to 1868-69, occurred a century ago in the art world. So I guess that's time of Impressionisms, and I think Cézanne comes in a few years later. Okay, in the middle, on the far right, it says, the artist is always aware that the old environments, the products of old technologies, are necessarily garbage, garbage in quotes. And in the book From Cliché to Archetype, McLuhan makes a big deal out of W.B. Yeats's poem, The Circus Animal's Desertion, which is about when the artist, the poet, like Yeats, runs out of his inspiration. He goes back to the rag and bone shop of the heart and starts looking at the garbage around him to find new cliché archetypes or new probes. Old cliché garbage, which can also be archetypal, the terms are often interchangeable, can become old archetype becomes new cliché, or old cliché becomes new archetype. Then below that, on angles, sort of going down to southeast, it says, many states are acoustically oriented organizations seemingly designed to drive visual bureaucrats mad. So think of the all the jazz musicians driving the downbeat critics mad. So mad that the downbeat guys then give up and praise everything jazz guys do. In relation to other cultures or other musical forms, they downbeat starts saying jazz is where it's at, better than symphonies, even though Duke Ellington and Charlie Parker studied classical music. Then below that is another little paragraph pointing up, slightly upwards, not southeast, so it's slightly northeast. It says, all major media, railways, newspapers, corporations, and broadcasting systems are mini-states. All major media, railways, newspapers, corporations, and broadcasting systems are mini-states. So more and more, the old analog media environments, you know, from the printing press on, publishing houses up to broadcasting systems, are being subsumed by an information environment that's 24/7 flux. So all the previous media environments are forced to become, quote, mafia-controlled mini-states. And they all have a civil war among them. And they all got to run around and support a president, contribute to all the presidential candidates so they can give their mini-state a voice in the process where the White House makes the word that makes the market, produces the word that makes the market. So there's a quote from, we go over to the next page, the right page, right-hand page, and a quote from Drucker again. Bureaucracies, whether of government, of big business, of the large hospital, or of the large university, share at least common patterns. But legislative bodies are baffled and deeply disturbed by the symbiotic relationships of the society of organizations. These relationships defy any control by the purse. They elude control by the legislature, whether the legislature be a parliament, a congress, or even the rubber stamp of a communist assembly. As a result, legislatures feel that they no longer understand, let alone control. The more intimately the various large organizations work together, the more irked and perturbed will legislature become. So he doesn't explain it, but these are symptoms. The legislature is the bulwark of visual space created by the printing press and nationalist structures. So they're at a loss to handle these electronic mini-states that are growing up around them. And one of those mini-states would be what was called the Mafia, and of course they would be able to bypass the Department of Justice, create mini empires through their drug dealing, then get influential in the government or into the old visual space legislature. But everybody else is doing the same thing. It's just that the Mafia was a on-the-ground, paralegal, acoustic organization. Okay, so you have that quote from Drucker. So McLuhan below that, as a paragraph, says, the recognition of structure as compared to a mere ongoing operation occurred a century ago in the art world. It is the basis of the humble detective story invented by Edgar Allan Poe. You start with the effect and structure everything to lead up to that effect. Then below that, in vertical, it says, the older idea was, quote, business as usual, unquote. Then that's in smaller letters than the paragraph above it. Then in bigger letters, the biggest on the page, other than the very first word of the top quote from Drucker, which is bureaucracies, that's in circus script and showbiz script, and it is very big. But almost as big, at the bottom it says, in the age of structures, knowledge necessarily replaces experience, and planned effect replaces mere narrative sequence. So note that. The authority of knowledge, it's not who you know, it's what you know, but then what you know, you got because you knew somebody, so it merges who, what, where you know. That determines why the old pecking order of the old organization chart, where you worked your way up through diligence and regular attendance at your job, and then you were rewarded. Well, that's bypassed by the need for patterns immediately to be produced in the electronic media or from the White House, the word that makes the market. So you bring in people who have knowledge and bypass the pecking order. That happens all across the society. It's like, you know, record companies supporting the Beatles, and all of a sudden a better group comes along, and they just dump the Beatles and move towards a new group. The new group has the rhythms of their music resonating with the audience's requirements due to new media environments over the last 18 months in general. Zappa said there always was a change every 18 months or a new fad. And on the right on that page, it has a huge bracketing lines. And what you call that? Two curvatures. One coming down and one going up. So then you go to the next page. And so here are these executives reading this. And you know, they're going, what's the art world got to do with this? So McLuhan is emphasizing art. That's what's sort of new here compared to other newsletters. A business newsletter, and at the top it says, the business of art, and art is in huge letters. The business of art in any age is to restructure the sensory life in order to awaken and accommodate men to, in italics, environmental change. The business of art in any age is to restructure the sensory life in order to awaken and accommodate men to environmental change. So McLuhan is getting people ready to point out that the great art masterpiece, Finnings Wake, is a guide for management, with a little Wyndham Lewis thrown in, too. So then there's a paragraph below that, and it says, smaller print. The artist is always aware that the old environments, the products of old technologies, are necessarily garbage. Garbage in quotes. When a new clothing, in quotes clothing, when a new clothing or service environment goes around an old environment or hardware structure, the old one is, quote, cast off, unquote, is junked. Exactly as the booster stage of a space capsule is cast off when its work is done. The booster is literally garbage, but the satellite, which it has helped to put into orbit around the planet or the moon, also has the effect of turning the planet or moon into a, quote, garbage, unquote, or obsolete environment. Then another paragraph, same size, small print, below that says, under satellite conditions, even without the electric service environment of telecommunications, the great centralist structures of maxi-states and big business organizations are being reshaped into small nucleated patterns. Oh, there's a new word, nucleated. New word for McLuhan's minimalist repetitive style of writing. Then McLuhan says, this accounts for what Peter Drucker notes as, quote, so now he's got another quote, the eighth quote from Drucker, quote, the growing disparity between apparent power and actual lack of control in government. In the international arena, government has all but disintegrated. The sovereign state, in quotes, the sovereign state, no longer functions as the effective organ for public tasks. So read that again. So he's saying under satellite conditions, even without the electric service environment of telecommunications, the great centralist structures of maxi states and big business organizations are being reshaped into small nucleated patterns. This accounts for what Peter Drucker notes as, quote, the growing disparity between apparent power and actual lack of control in government. In the international arena, government has all but disintegrated. The sovereign state no longer functions as the effective organ for public tasks. Now, this is coming out in February 1969. I'm talking to Dave Worster around this time, and he's explaining that as a result of Rai, the original separateness, returning to the plane of essence, all the old power elites were out of sync and in trouble, and they were going to lose whatever powers they did have historically. even including passing on their family wealth through generations, through maybe some occult versions of reincarnation or something. That's what people, esoteric thought would say. Anyways, Worster said, picking up what Cosmic Awareness said, they would be out of sync and would misfire, and it actually meant that the plans to have a nuclear war that the elites were having, were going to have a controlled nuclear war to set up a world takeover, were not going to work. So I was told by Worster this point. So I was no longer subject to, besides knowing the chaos in the Secret Council 10, I was no longer subject to this Alex Jones or biblical meme that this huge war was inevitable. The Cosmic Awareness said things happened in the mid-60s that changed the pattern which would have wiped out the world by 1994. That had changed. That was the good news of the Cosmic Awareness movement. Now, I could see McLuhan, you know, in a practical, technical way, was supporting that statement. So, below that statement by Drucker, McLuhan comments on Drucker and says, Drucker goes on to point to the contrary development in which, quote, the national state is everywhere in danger of collapsing into petty parochial baronies, hyphen, whether French Canada or an independent Flanders, Biafra and West Africa, or Scots nationalism. I'll read that again. Drucker goes on to point to the contrary development in which, quote, the national state is everywhere in danger of collapsing into petty parochial baronies, whether French Canada or an independent Flanders, Biafra and West Africa, or Scots nationalism. Unquote. Then below that, McLuhan says, and this is vertical, in the old hardware days of the 1900s, the trend had been toward the adding of one territory to another. I guess that would be World War One. It was a war of centralization, McLuhan said, based on the railroad, whereas World War II was a war of decentralization. Okay, so let me just take a break here for a second. Unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
I'm watching there.
Yes, it's full.
Good.
But condensed.
it's the same with Babylon, because he says under satellite conditions there is no state, but actually there was never really a state. People think they belong to this football team, but actually things were always controlled beyond these states, I think, beyond these illusions of having states, and are still controlled like that. And when the state is making business, like they prefer to invest in prisons and security and instead of hospitals and schools and education and all this, you see that the there is not a real government, but the groups like mafias and corporations that are really controlling this thing. But I was watching the trailer of the new Bond film that also takes place in Mexico, and they say there is an organization behind everything, like a mysterious organization, and it's like very dark. And I think it's
right.
Sort of what they're showing, this thing behind the illusion of the state.
Well, the Bond movies are always about the upstart decentralist dynamic that some new technology in some small group or fascist emperor guy is going to topple the organized world visual space situation. Just a minute. Okay, try to be quiet here. It's not, try this one. Keep that one quiet. So, now, Roxy, it's better to use terms, immediate terms, like there was no larger controlling environment in the time of the city-states, unless you start talking about the new visual space that was coming in with the phonetic alphabet. You know, you're looking at a decentralized structure versus a centralized structure, eye versus ear, based on the media dynamic. And Harold Innes goes through the whole history of culture and government, pointing out this conflicting pattern. So we could say, bring in Ion, that, yeah, there were parallel worlders and Illuminati types, But all these people were subject to the new media environments and the changes, so they had to adapt. They kept themselves secretly in power because they could adapt, because they knew the meeting was the message. And that was why I was sent to spy on McLuhan in 53-54 by my bosses at Secret Council 10, because he was writing an essay in the opening journal called Explorations about how the meeting was the message. And the elite spy agencies were saying, holy geez, this guy knows what we know. So the medium as the message is Freemasonic knowledge to the degree any human could do it. There was always unforeseen effects of new environments. But I would say, what if we re-listen to what you said, Roxy, I would be more precise in how I made those distinctions using media as ground descriptions. You get what I'm saying?
Yes. The thing is, there is not much time, so I'm trying to put right. a lot in this. For example, I was very surprised to know when I went to Turkey that most of Greece was actually in Turkey. What we think is Greece. Yeah, all
that'd
these
be Macedonia.
Famous cities, all these famous cities and all the famous philosophers were actually born right. in what we know as Turkey.
And Turkey. And well, Turkey was a result of the collapse of the Ottoman Empire. That was the nationalists, the printing press, the newspaper guys organizing a new environment, and it would override the acoustic or particular city-states of ancient Greece. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, and what I find really amazing is, like, he goes from miniskirts and sideburns to all
yeah.
these things. It's like things that are showing up in your environment, in visual attitudes of the people, have a very deep
common denominator. The medium.
Yes.
The medium makes all the particular activities resonate with this hidden ground. And that could not be seen until the 20th century.
He's showing the hidden ground, and also you are showing with Diane the hidden ground. That's the fascinating thing with all the.
Right. Well, you got blipped out. Did your phone die? Okay. Bert, do you have anything to say, Bert?
Yes, Bob. There was a pattern. I wrote some notes where he stated that the mini-state is acoustic. And then there was a reference that
yes.
many state irritated the major media, and then there was a pattern further that talked about analog media, where the previous media becomes the mini states, and then there was a reference of legislation. So is that a pattern where the older media, the analog media, developed legislation to try to pump up visual space to prop up their power in a legislative branch? Is that the pattern
yes.
he was outlining?
Yes. Now, analog media is my term, and that's for early electric media. And then there's the digital media, but he's talking about electric media, and we'll call that analog media. But basically he's talking about the decentralist effect of the telephone and radio and electric media as a threat to the old visually based, print-based legislatures. So the legislatures have to become fascist, a group. It's like J. Edgar Hoover, keeping a secret file on everybody, threatening to expose them in the new electric environment so he controlled them through that bribery or blackmail. That's all that the old visual structures had on people.
Yeah.
May I interrupt because I don't have much time?
Yes.
But you were also saying there is this intensity of roles. We are into
yes.
this role playing, and how the electric affected it. And he said, "Mitchell should grow sideburns." And I was thinking, with the intensity, the new intensity of the call play, the new role is to be God.
Yes. Yeah, to retrieve your godhood. And it would be a new kind of god. Not when you retrieve something, it comes back differently. So actually, Ion is having us retrieve our godhood in a new way. It can't be the same old literate and pre-literate form of godhood. at least in the realm of public communication and mortar. It may always be the same. And he said, go ahead.
That's the conflict for many people, that they are expecting this Bible retrieval, the replay of the
yes.
printing press archetypes. And
yes.
then the Whore of Babylon is not what they expected, and you are another type of prophet, and they are gods.
Yes. No, that's important, and McLuhan helps us understand that in Finnegan's Wake, this retrieval process. So let me see how much I can read of the remaining four pages before you have to go at 9:30, and we can talk about it next week or not. But you will see, it's interesting, new wrinkles, but the same stuff, always.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yep, he was just
right,
like replaying his memes.
That's right. And he would do it in a written book to show that the printing press is always a repeat mechanism, a ditto mechanism. He would not be so much like this in conversation as we hear in the recordings of with Tony Schwartz. He's all over the place. He's not writing out a linear, repetitive print bias situation. Okay, so there's another aspect. He's also acoustic within the print because he's going into depth awareness. Most print just wants endless paragraphs and linear progression of an argument. He's saying, here's the answer. I can put it in five sentences. I'll just repeat the answer. What?
He was an English professor, and for example, you said the next head of the Federal Reserve should be a grammarian. And yes, everybody should be a grammarian now because it's the only way to understand what's going on, to read.
That's right.
The thing that
and the elites, the smart elites are involved with us. You know, the Queen, Buffett, they are, you know, luckily taking what we're doing seriously.
Hey, hello.
Okay, so we got 15 minutes. Let's see how much I can read this, and maybe we'll go over it again next week because it is a lot of stuff, sort of. And let me try to run through it. Okay, so I'll mute people.
All participants are now muted.
So this next page at the top says, additive communities of the British Commonwealth pattern appealed to the 19th century as the natural pattern of, quote, world unification, unquote. See? World government is, as I have in my charts, is a 19th century phenomenon. Additive communities of the British Commonwealth pattern appealed to the 19th century as the natural pattern of world unification. That's when you could have hyper-centralization globally before the electronic decentralization. Then here is McLuhan commenting on Drucker. Drucker may not know why these changes are taking place, but it would be difficult to improve on his description and documentation. So Drucker's good, I'm saying, at providing figures. McLuhan brings the ground in. Drucker seems to be not too clued in on the ground. Then he says, continuing this paragraph on Drucker, from the 19th century managerial structures based on hardware service environments, in brackets, for example, press, market, railway, postal system, close bracket, to the new reverse pattern of decentralization based on telecommunications and instant retrieval systems, there is a reversal of dynamics. So from the 19th century to the new reverse pattern is a reversal. The new electric dynamic is returned to the tribal mini-state. Then it has quote number 9 from Drucker. Quote, increasingly we are fragmenting the world into governmental pygmies, each endowed with tremendous power vis-a-vis its citizens, each perfectly capable of tyranny, but incapable of governing, unquote. And then McLuhan comments on this quotation. In this last quotation, Drucker reveals why he has no theory of organization for contemporary use. McLuhan says, fragmenting, that's a term that Drucker uses, so quoting, fragmenting, comma, splintering and specializing are, paradoxically, the effects of the massive hardware technologies and service environments that began with Gutenberg. So, McLuhan is, and that's spelled not paradoxically, it's spelled paradosically, P-A-R-A-D-O-S-I-C-A-L-L-Y. Don't know if that's a mistake or a pun. And then, before you get to the lower part of the page, there's a big ellipse showing a side view of an eyeball, with the eyelids, and it says above it on the upper arch, the IS Broadcasting Center. And below that, in quotes, in the apple of my eye. See, preliterate man broadcasts with the eye, but literate man is a passive consumer, and the information came into the eye rather than the eye making space. In the apple of my eye, I'm not sure whether that's visual or acoustic. Seems to be visual. So then, okay. So that is actually this circle with the statement, the eye is broadcasting center in the apple of my eye, is the beginning of a sentence, a little paragraph. And these are bigger letters. The eye is broadcasting center, quote, in the apple of my eye, unquote, comma, then small letters, therefore had a unique meaning totally divorced from our present percepts. Present percepts would be electric world. The eye was then considered more than a mere receptor. It was an organ that helped make or reconstitute the external world. Then you go over to the right side underneath the elliptical image of the eyeball, and it says, this allowed the medieval observer an equally unique mode of participation in his universe, which paradoxically he forfeited as a result of Renaissance stress on visual specialism and detachment. Then there's a little, like, a commercial. Dueline newsletters in the immediate future include, quote, no, not quote, colon, film and tape presentations, a set of recordings by Dr. McLuhan with diverse communications and media experts, advanced copies of his latest books and articles, and a comprehensive discussion of the dynamics of reversal and psychic and social change, the paradox of breakdown is breakthrough. Some samples from this latter are, one, Soul City, quote, Soul City, that was a term for 68 was Aretha Franklin year, and also Black Power. So he has Soul City and the Rise of Black Power is a social and political breakdown that reveals the characters and processes of color TV as well as of the black population. Next point, the generation gap revealed the nature of identity. Point three, the speed up of travel created, quote, jet city, unquote, or a new, quote, planetary city, unquote. He's saying that instead of a global village, composed of circulating inhabitants. That's the herb it orbs. This speed up is also a breakdown of all metropolitan areas, revealing the meaning of cities as such. Then below that, for subscriptions to the Dueline Right Human Development Corporation, 119 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, area code, zip code 10003. But that's not the end of the newsletter. That's just thrown there, like at the two-thirds mark. So now we have a whole column, straight down a column, you know, 5, 6, 7 words per line, and behind it is the bullseye, or the resonating spiraling. You put a pebble in the water, and the water ripples go out. So this rippling image, it says, electric speed-up and the environment of telecommunications creates innumerable mini-states that are not specialist or exclusive. They're still saying the same idea, but adding a little point, they're not specialist or exclusive. These new forms are inclusive, as are those of family and tribal government. This explains why mafia guys end up on corporate boards. These mini-states are forced to merge. And McLuhan says that the new boards of corporations are made up of utterly unlike entities. So these new forms are inclusive, as are those of family and tribal government. Any visually organized attempt to cope with such inclusive structures as those created by the new electric environments leads to direct conflict, whether at the parent-child level, that's hyphenated, whether at the parent-child level, or at the business or international level. It is not generally understood that the structure of these new patterns is not one of explosion, nor of expansion, but of implosion. It is the pulling out of the spaces between components. Telecommunications pulls out the space and time distances between all operations, all information, all associations. This is the structure of the new organization at every level and in every region of the contemporary world. It is the antithesis of bureaucratic structure. So he's pointing out how the image of 1984 is obsolete. And he says, it ends the organization chart just as it ends party politics based on policies. It ends subjects and credits in the university. Look at that. That didn't actually happen. It ends subjects and credits in the universities. But the universities changed. These pressures made them, just become the assembly plants that people before the 70s and 80s complained universities weren't like they were in the 1560s. It substitutes knowledge for experience and creates learning by immersion. It replaces job holding by role-playing. So he said this 100 times. Look at the gall of putting out a newsletter and saying the same thing each newsletter. For the manager, it requires fusion of the roles of emperor and clown, of environment maker and image prober. Now, I used to say Trudeau was the best at that. And Trudeau had just become prime minister in 68. If Peter Drucker has failed to grasp the role of the hidden service environments in shaping the climate of decision and organization structure, then lesser men can be forgiven for futile confrontation of what seems to them to be pure opacity. Read that again. If Peter Drucker has failed to grasp the role of the hidden service environments in shaping the climate of decision and organization structure, so McCoon's saying he's a pretty smart guy, then lesser men can be forgiven for futile confrontation of what seems to them to be pure opacity. Okay, I think my phone might be blipping out occasionally as we come to the end of it, but we're almost finished. Okay, so then he goes to the next page, and he's got a left column. It says, Drucker observes that, quote, in 1900, there were fewer than 50 sovereignties in the whole world, -20 in Europe and 20 in the Americas, with the rest of the world having fewer than a dozen. World War I increased the number to about 60. Now we have more than 160 with new, quote, mini-states, unquote, joining the ranks almost every month. That's footnote number 10. The other side of this process of decentralization is the rise of the, quote, superpowers, unquote, the monopolizers of advanced technologies. These superpowers have themselves become service environments for the rest of the globe and each other in brackets, and cease to be sovereign states in the old sense. These are the powers with the weapons. Got blipped out again. These are the powers with the atomic weapons, the, quote, overkill, unquote, that produces, quote, the peace that passes all technology, unquote. You know, not going to be any wars or any nuclear wars. The elites will bomb anybody who tries that. And then in big letters, in conclusion, it might be helpful to indicate some of the forms of the new mini-states compressed within the vast service environment of the new global theater. They include the teenagers, the hippies, and the elderly. Both, quote, Mother Bell, unquote, and AT&T constitute mini-states that are part of the world service environment. IBM and RCA, that's a record company, music, you know, entertainment company. IBM and RCA are similar, quote, alma maters, unquote, or, quote, world mothers, unquote, of our new tribal condition. Universities are mini-states, as are trade and credit unions. All major media, railways, newspapers, and broadcasting systems are mini-states. He just said those already in previous pages, those sentences. Now, look at this. The American Negro is a mini-state first created by jazz. He already said that, but maybe he's going to say a few more words. Jazz became and remains part of the world service and cultural environment. Remember he said it was the new Esperanto, united the world. Then he says, going down in this column, typical of the quaint mosaics created by the electric drive toward mini-states are the new schools in California for teaching old Indian lore. Western anthropologists now work to retrieve the traditional components to provide identity masks for ghetto Indians. This reversal is as incongruous as the process by which, in the 1920s, the communities of the world were integrated by popular Negro jazz. At the same time, the avant-garde, italicized, the avant-garde had concurred in uniting its efforts to retrieve every form of primitive art from sculpture to dance. The avant-garde, in italics, is a mini-state as much as is the global music. I got flipped out to read that again. The avant-garde is a mini-state as much as is the global rock music community or the teenage market. Now, we've learned later that Marcel Duchamp is like the hidden godfather of the avant-garde as mini-state. He didn't make art. He managed it through his liaisoning with everybody, including Peggy Guggenheim. Of course, the armed services are mini-states, as is the police force. Jet City, the, quote, herb, unquote, as, quote, orb, unquote, is a new maxi-state. So Jet City, that's the new term for global village or global theater. Jet City, the herb as orb, is a new maxi-state enveloping all the metropolitan areas which it has supplanted. And just finishing up, the next page. The de-Romanization of the Roman Catholic Church is a prominent instance. The individual Catholic and the, quote, mystical body, and that's italicized, unquote, now constitute mini-states. So the mystical body is a mini-state. These closed structures Well, the individual Catholic and the mystical body are now constitute many states. These closed structures are the exact opposite of the schismatic Catholic of the 16th century. The 16th century dropout from the Catholic Church was prompted by private interpretation and fragmentary specialism. And I would add, you know, the dropout from the Catholic Church leads to the Protestant Church. The 20th century dropout is motivated by a sense of wholeness and involvement. All existing metros are now undergoing the same dissolution as all other central structures, large or small. Many states, then, are not centralized governments in any form, but are resonating spheres of existence whose centers are everywhere and whose boundaries are nowhere, i.e., they are acoustically oriented organizations seemingly designed to drive visual bureaucrats mad. Then he has a picture of a shining knight, well, just a knight, a sketchy medieval knight, and it says to the left of his head, Transportation-speed effects. Transportation-speed effects. Then on the right side of the old-fashioned medieval knight, in bigger letters, but not as big as transportation-speed effects, it says, the motor car created the suburb. The airplane made every city the suburb of every other. Now the jet, comma, the jumbo jet and the SST. SST, I guess, might have been the Concorde, I'm not sure. And then the last page has three spheres, like Bucky Fuller balls, sinking into each other vertically. A big one coming into a second one, which is, you see only half of it is sort of squished, and then a third one is squished below that. And it says, with letters far in the back, perspective, small letters coming towards us on a curve and getting bigger and bigger as they get closer to us. It says, we are back in acoustic space. And then it has the bang that was on the cover page backwards. But if you put it in the mirror, it would be written directly. And then below that, the word implosion. So, with 1 minute left,
All participants are now unmuted.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. the jet setters will interact in all metropoles, and now the portal setters are going to interact in all the fucking worlds there are.
Yes, the six body fucking. And what's interesting, you see how much he's repeating himself?
Yeah, it's like a collage. He just keeps repeating himself, but he puts some points to link them together to put a new, to create a new thought pattern.
Right. And maybe it is so hard to understand that he can only put a new wrinkle into it, you know, one issue. It's slight. It's too much for people to even get the basic message. So the wrinkles tease and elaborate and are slow.
Yeah,
drop,
I think
Chinese
so. That's
water
too. It's like he's spoon feeding.
What'd you say, Eliza?
I said it's as
what'd you say, Eliza?
Spoon feeding. Can you hear me?
Yes, spoon feeding. Yes, he is spoon feeding.
Yeah, giving
definitely.
Them small doses.
No,
and
I think
it's
a composition. I think he knew very well what he was doing. When you compose, you use repetition very consciously because it's important to repeat the motif.
What do you use? What
repetition.
Do you, what do you do? Oh,
repetition.
Repetition.
Rhythm. For example, that was one of the things in Beethoven. He would repeat the same motif, like I think he really knew what he was doing.
As a musician, right? What? Who did you quote? Did that? Da 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 da. Who?
Beethoven.
Oh, Beethoven. Yeah. Now here's people would visually literate biased people would say McLuhan just repeats himself, and McLuhan would say, well, acoustic people go into repetition in depth. Visual man moves over the surface and he has to have constant new visual stimulation, which leads to consumption. So you've got your suburban matriarch running around with her executive husband, getting lots of money saying, buy new clothes, new this, new that. Whereas her sister's on welfare, digging radio and trying to push dope to the rock groups. You know, and digging the replaying of Janis Joplin every day when she gets up. See, eye versus ear in the WASP culture.
Okay, I have to leave you in your orgy.
Yes, if you go enjoy the Arby, you're going to a bureaucratic structure, going over to the eyeball orgy. Okay, well, you may be back in time before we finish, right? I don't know if you will be.
Yes, who knows. Okay, yes. Have fun.
Okay.
Take care,
well, thanks for your contribution.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, I was going to say something. Oh, yeah, in this quote I posted on Dupes and on my Facebook page from LaRouche, where LaRouche is talking ionic.
Wow.
The higher chemistries and all that. You probably read that, right?
Yes. That was really brilliant. Go ahead.
Let me say this. What's brilliant was he involves the playwright, the Athenian playwright, Aristophanes, and says that he understood the deal better than Archimedes, who's famous for discovering leverage or something. You know, important scientific principles came out of Archimedes, but I adapt an ionic interpretation of that. The LaRouche knows that people and the theatrical nature of society is an important part of creativity. And so he's saying that Aristophanes saw that the sun was just a shadow, was just a surface visual space, and was showing the dynamics and moral problems, ethical problems of people, you know, through theater. So that's pretty comprehensive, and it's much like Ion saying, well, that answer depends on who is asking it or who is listening to it. The people part of chemistry, LaRouche is picking up on.
Yes, and that was recent, right? It was 2014. That's what was amazing. It's like he's dancing around what you're doing. He was talking about what you're doing. But the question is, he has no idea unless he has spies of what you're actually doing. Or does he?
No,
does he know what you're doing?
I'm pretty sure he doesn't. They're pretty old-fashioned, and they would be shocked for me to say that he's describing us, and they go, well, where's your cold fusion device? Well, what medicine are you talking about? Well, take these drops. Are you nuts? You know, I don't think they could perceive the present environment. But his concepts, that's why I picked them, are pretty avant-garde from a later perspective that he probably not even aware of. And but you take his words, and he's talking about being stronger and bigger and more powerful than the sun. Well, that's cold fusion on a cliche level. And then our stuff is beyond the matter of this dimension. So I'm taking his words. Now, the other thing was, he's 93 years old when he's saying that. 92 years old. Remember, he's born in 1922.
That's right.
Same as me. So he's my, you know, we went to the same high school together kind of thing. We were in the same class. We're in the history class. We dropped Latin. You couldn't take the British intelligence ruining the Latin world, so we went for Leibniz and Bernd Riemann's geometry. We had a good high school teacher. It turned me and Lynn onto that. And then I went my way, and he went his, and I never saw him until 1966 when I was asked by Licio Gelli, the guy who killed the 30-day Pope, Licio Gelli, P2 Society leader, asked me to get somebody to represent the Vatican in the student riot movement of 66-67. And I found a man named Lynn Marcus, which was Lynn LaRouche's pen name in the socialist periodical world. And so I said, oh, my God, you're the guy I went to high school with, you know, way back there in another world. He said, I don't remember you. You're a fucking liar. So he says, you don't look my age. No, I don't look your age. No, that's right. I look young, don't I? Don't I, Lynn? Yeah, you look young. Okay, so that was a hallucinatory digression. That's
going
creativity
back to-
for you right there.
Going back to the dew line, Bob, it was really a collage, condensed, because I found myself, when you're reading that, I've heard that before. Okay, what's the link?
Yeah.
What's the link? And then there was one point where he put in, well, at the beginning he said business of art and art of business, but somewhere in between there, he gave a description of the purpose of an artist is to restructure sensory life and the environmental change. So that was like a clue for the reader of what Bakun was doing with post restating all of those old, not old, but repeating those themes, was showing that their sensory life is being changed by the electric media, and he was giving examples. So it was interesting to hear, not to
read. Yeah, he's Yeah, he's saying he's doing what the artist does. He's structuring your sensory layout. He's you're distracted by the content, and then it becomes an art form because he is not doing a newsletter in the prose form of statistics. He's presenting a newsletter in an avant-garde way to point to something way beyond the newsletter. And he's not trying to make money. You know, he's not telling you how to invest in stocks or something.
Yes.
He's telling you why your family will be wrecked over the coming decade.
Yes. It, also,
What?
When
Eliza,
I think it was the first page when he said, did he say that something as small as sideburns has a significant event on society?
Yes, it is a figure for something that is changing society. So that a simple thing like changing a sideburn, or putting sideburns on is the same thing as pop art, Andy Warhol becoming a figure. Across the board, the whole structure of human behavior and their institutions are being molded by the same force and actually have similar effects or similar meanings. Like, you have to add sideburns because you have to make your mask when you're on TV, you make your face when you're on TV look like a mask because you're putting on vast populations and they're not interested in your point of view, they're interested in how cool you look in terms of all the changes that are going on in society across the board. So McLuhan's solution for Watergate, here's Nixon doing this or that, you know, maybe snuffing people, plane crashes in Chicago, the famous scandal that Skolnick exposes in late 72. McLuhan said, no, you don't have to kill off Democrats or journalists, you just have to wear sideburns. And of course, the average mind will say, well, that's quite satirical. But he actually could justify it. Because your image is way beyond your power maneuvers, Nixon. Your image is what you've got to bring up to date. You can't have this dark, eyeshadowed, alcoholic lawyer look. Show that you're aware of the present by putting some sideburns or a mustache on. And, of course, the old literate person who doesn't want to be affected by the environment says, oh, that's feds. That's for women. That's for teenagers. I'm not involved in feds. You know, and they can maintain their literate integrity and end up in jail.
Yeah, I can see that because when you talk to people, when you talk to people, the first thing they notice is, you know, the way you look. And when you start talking to them, your words, like, they start to hear them, but the first thing they see is your look, and they don't hear you till after a few seconds or so.
Right, because you have a speed up of information. People and media are bombarding you every day, especially in a bigger city. So you have to assess what's going on really fast. So you could say people become hypocritical because they judge you by your first impression, by your surface look, which in literate, slower society say, well, that's not important. You know, don't judge a man by a book by its cover. But in a change situation moving at an apocalyptic speed of light, you take your clues as soon as possible. And so you start judging people. That's why McLuhan said newspapers would describe somebody and they go, so-and-so, 52 years old, and they just put the number 52. They know people can approximate, oh, yeah, we know what 52-year-olds look like. You know what I mean? These are iconic uses of detail to create the cartoon image of everybody. So it's not a hypocritical society when everybody's judging you on the surface. There's no time to look into your literate integrity.
Yeah.
It is hypocritical to once you hear this and not tell people this. That's what I used to say, you know, all a president has to do is just talk McLuhan stuff. And he'd appear like a prophet and he'd rise above all the factional fighting in Congress. People would be interested in someone talking that way. So McLuhan was actually giving the script for senior management to talk, and none of them could do it. Drucker got close. Peter Drucker did.
It was interesting that he knew that Drucker was just spying on him. He referred to him as the man who came to listen.
Well, McLuhan wrote books. I've said this before, but here's a new context. He wrote books with people who he said were spying on him. Barry Nevitt, he always said, worked for British intelligence. His colleague.
Wow.
He said the Kirchhoff was selling advertising for the CIA in Africa in 1974 to a young woman who was a student of Derek and was absolutely shocked. I had to help her home after that. Me and Carol helped her home after the shocking problem she got herself into perceptually by saying, what's Derek doing? And McLuhan says, this was a Saturday afternoon around July 22nd. We were down at the coach house before we went to New York City to witness Watergate, which the impeachment was August 8th or 9th. Was it JW's birthday? August 8th or 9th, 1974 is when Nixon resigned. And a few weeks before, we were with McLuhan in Toronto, and he told this young lady that Derek was selling advertising for the CIA in Africa. Turned out to be true. Der Kirchhoff says he didn't know those guys were CIA, but he writes in his later books that he had a curious job in Africa. He had all these great ideas, was doing good stuff with his advertising, and he told his bosses to, hey, do it this way, and they wouldn't listen to him. He said they were very lackadaisical. They didn't seem to care about making sales. So when I told him what Marshall said about him, he goes, maybe so. Maybe that's why they weren't interested in my business skills. Some of us back then didn't like the way Der Kirchhoff was running the McLuhan program. Nelson Thal would say that Der Kirchhoff was consciously CIA or British intelligence or something. You know, he pretended he didn't know that. But how did he get a job with those guys in Africa? So what'd you say, Lisa or Leza? Did he know?
Did he ever learn why you met him?
Okay, who are you talking about?
Why you met McLuhan? How you crossed paths with him?
But you're asking who you're asking? Who did know
you,
what?
You, because
I know.
You mentioned other people
redo your question using people's names.
Did McLuhan ever learn why you, Bob, crossed paths with him, how you came to learn about him?
It never was said. I never was going to bring it up because then that would be forced to be confronted. And he knew the kind of information I gave him, and he appreciated it. And it wasn't a matter. It wasn't a concern. He was surrounded by CIA. What's another CIA going to do around him? You know, it didn't matter what I was. It might have mattered if I did stuff with him, wrote books with him, then maybe he would have checked things out. But he remained indifferent to my circumstances. The only time he was interested in my circumstances is in 1977. We went to a Monday night seminar, and he knew me for years, and it's the first time there's a woman sitting beside me. And he never commented on anybody in the group sitting in the chairs in the small seminar room. And pretty quickly we sat down. The seminar might have been 5 or 10 minutes before the seminar started. He looks at me. He looks at Carol and says, "Who's this?" First time ever he was saying, "Who is this, babe?" He didn't say babe, but he was quite. That's the first time he kind of asked me a personal question, and I said, "This is my bride." My bride of 11 years. and so the next image, so here's what's interesting. Carolyn only came a few times that autumn, but she befriended a cousin of McLuhan when she was a student. That year she was living in Hamilton, Ontario, which is an hour from Toronto, and she was going to McMaster University and taking a free kind of medical course. And you didn't have to study or take courses, but it had a great number of months off for elective. The guy who taught at McMaster, Ross Hume Hall, note Annie Hall, the Woody Allen movie, that's a name in McLuhan's family. Ross Hume Hall wrote a book, Food for Naught, using McLuhan's ideas to explain why food was bad, was really weak. And so she befriended Ross Hume Hall in Hamilton, and then one day she mentioned it to McLuhan, and he said, "Oh, I'd like to have my cousin's book." So she brought McLuhan, within a few weeks, a copy of the book. And late one night, might have been that night, Carolyn is standing in the outer secretary office, and the outer entrance area. And I'm inside in the seminar, and I'm looking, and there's McLuhan, tall McLuhan, standing beside midget Carolyn. And their backs are to me, and they're looking at some poster. And I see McLuhan take some money out of his pocket and slip it to Carolyn, like, here's $5, I want a blowjob later. It was that kind of fucking gesture. He was smuggling the money to Carolyn, and nobody knew it. He didn't want anybody to see it, but I was in the position in the back, I saw it. Very funny. He was slipping her secretly some money. Don't know what that was about.
Did you happen to say what it was for, Bob?
No,
it was apparently for the Ross Hume Hall book. But why would he make it such a secret exchange?
Because he's probably flirting with me.
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah.
I'm proud to admit it. McLuhan tried to fuck my wife. But Carol knew better. I assume. Who knows? Hey, Carol, you want to confess something? All the characters are dead. Wouldn't matter now, Carol.
I was away a lot, wasn't I, Bob?
Yeah, that's right. You never came to any seminars. Highly suspicious. You knew it would get too embarrassing for you and McLuhan. But he couldn't contain himself. He goes, he was guilty. He already knew you. So he had to pretend that he knew you. He never cared what anybody was, but he was so guilt-racked, he goes, "Oh, who's this, Bob?" The one time he spoke, man, he did know who you were. All right. Well, I'll check with Mary McLuhan on that. Or Ion. I'll check with Ion. He'll tell me. So what else in this McLuhan article, Bert? Or anybody else who wants to speak?
Bob, he mentioned, it seems that McLuhan, I never heard much, but I remember one tape, he mentioned something about the Vietnam War. And then within this due line, he mentioned that the Viet Cong had more power than the soldier in World War II.
Right.
So he...
Well, remember, a big part of modern warfare, this whole... these wars, small wars, and what McLuhan called the backyards of the global theater, were just the old arms dealers creating conflict in little old backward countries to sell their weapons. Right? So a lot of it's for drugs and guns.
Yes.
Not for any ideology, but did you were going to say, okay, so what did McLuhan say?
Well, he just said that the Viet Cong soldier, even though they were guerrillas, had more power than a soldier in World War II. Yeah. So he was
now
looking
he
at...
Now, he called that education.
Yes.
You know, in War and Peace and Gold Village, warfare was education. He used to... There was a movie that came out in the early 60s with Peter Sellers, The Mouse That Roared was the name of it. It was about a third world, tin pot dictator declaring war in the United States so that they would come and attack him, and then when they left, they'd leave all this modern weaponry, which were often called cargo cults. So if you wanted to catch up with the world, and you had a backward country, you get in a war, so you get all this equipment coming into your country. The Mouse That Roared. And Maybrosso and LaRouche make a lot out of that, the immorality of guns and drugs being the real reason for Vietnam or Korea or anything else that's happened since. But McLuhan didn't address that point. He just said the East goes West, the Third World goes North, goes First World by having a war so they can get all the old industrial equipment that the West doesn't want anymore. You get that?
Yes. I don't know where I've heard this, but I don't know if it was from you, but it was something about Iraq, the Iraq war, and cars, that there's a lot of cars now in Iraq.
Right, a lot of satellite dishes.
Yeah, since the Iraqi war, that their whole environment has changed since that war. I just flipped in when you were talking about the Viet Cong and the wars and the guns. So that's an interesting pattern to how they and now the war thing is changed to a whole nother level with this IS. So that's
right.
Something to,
here's an idea, Bert. McLuhan said, you know, you've got technologies, new technologies come in to wreck the societies they're introduced into. And he said war was that normal introduction of technologies, but accelerated. It was just normal technological change in the 20th century, accelerated. So there was a lot of collateral damage. But the end result of a war is that society gets changed by the technologies that got adopted in that culture.
Yes.
And, of course, that freaks out all kinds of cultures. That's where the terrorist war came from. The elites in the Middle East, the Arab elites, didn't find any role for themselves in a rapidly changing world. So they retrieved religion, fundamentalist religion, to pretend have a reason to slow down the technological change. And then they attack America, and America fights them back, and then they lose. The elites in the Middle East lose because of new effects unforeseen of the technologies they were trying to resist. You can't resist them.
Yes.
Either way, you're stuck with new technologies. It's just a matter. It's prettier and tidier in the United States than it is in the third world countries. It's just all messy in those places. You know, death squads pop up. Chaos everywhere. There's lots of chaos in North America, but there's lots of islands of suburban bliss. Until recently, until we showed up. Now everything's gone to hell, right? Everything. We're the most destructive techno environment that ever existed.
Speaking of that, Bob.
You speak about war. We destroyed the military department because people aren't into war anymore. As of 8 years ago, you could say that we killed the Pentagon. They can't get a war going.
There's something that was mentioned in DoLine that popped the question.
What happened?
I had some background. Yeah, I have some background noise. Phone. There was a reference of fragmentation and specialization makes for more openness. Is that due to the electric environment?
You're saying fragmentation makes for more openness? Is that what you just said?
Yes, that's what I wrote a note down about that. Fragmentation, specialization makes for more openness.
Oh, yeah, that is the conceit of democratic capitalist societies, that people have the right to have informed opinions and to vote equally before the law. That's called an open society. But when radio came in, you had the closed society comes in, known as communism or fascism or FDR or the New Deal. The electronic implosion makes the old literate values obsolete. The group mind takes over, and that's considered not an open society by Karl Popper, this famous intellectual who wrote this book in the 40s or so, The Open Society and Its Enemies. So it's the conceit of the literate people that they run an open society, but they actually are so open they allow new technologies to come in unwittingly, which turns their society into a closed society. That was the satirical point in McLuhan. Okay, Mr. Popper, yeah, you've got an open society, but you're so open you don't know that the closed society is due to your openness because you don't foresee the effects of electronic implosion, which leads to police states and totalitarianism.
So the theme when McLuhan, the big overlying theme that McLuhan is presenting is about the speed up of the service environment with the electric environment.
Yes, the speed up and the services and disservices for older cultures, older media. Services and disservices.
Services and
he's not making it good or bad. He's making an inventory like an accountant. Well, this will be upsetting to that part of society, but it will appear enthusiastic for this side. In other words, radio, when it became obsolete by TV, it created rock and roll, which is great, great stuff. It created a medium for teenage music, which was black music crossed over into the white zone. So that made a whole new genre of music.